So, when you left the high school or the Christian Brothers, your family then, your parents were reunited in Sydney, is that what happened? So your father had given up on the cordial business, or?
Well, he went to he got a job. He was a very good, he had all his own recipes. When he left Adams, Eastman's, which was another cordial factory in Broken Hill, they found out that he'd left. What happened was Adams, the man Adams actually owned the place, sold it to a guy, Fred Williams, I think his name was. And Dad lost, didn't lose. He took over, the new owner took over the managing side of, which Dad always done, because Adams was not a well man. And the new owner was, his father had bought it for him, and he was in rich, new, didn't know anything guy sort of thing, as far as Dad was concerned. Dad didn't get on well with him. And I don't know what happened. Maybe something happened with the phone. Oh, it surely would have. Maybe the phone was disconnected, and Dad had use of one of the trucks, which was taken off him. And he resigned. And Eastman's heard about it and employed him the same day. And I don't know what happened there. I think it might have been a drink with Dad, but he parted with Eastman's and opened his own cordial factory, small cordial factory, Baker's Better Beverages or something that was called. We used to go around there, me and some of my mates. Dad would pay us to label the bottles, and it was like a tray of glue in front of you, and you wipe the label on the glue and stuck it on the bottle. Instead of it at Adam's factory, it was all automatic, it was all machine driven. That's what I should say. When Dad was at Adams, he had a vat, a private vat of his own, that about every 3 months he used to come in on the weekend and fire up the machines in the factory and bottle his home brew.
Oh, okay.
And Daryl, my brother and I, we used to go down and help him, because and the crown sealer, he'd adjust everything, do all the adjustments, and fire the factory up, sort of thing. The whole factory was going just for maybe 3 dozen. I forget, fair bit of beer. But one particular time we were there, and the crown sealer, it was a big heavy, it'd bring the bottle, it'd deliver the bottle, and the crown sealer had sort of swooped down on it and put the bottle cap on and go up. And Daryl always reckons it wasn't him, and Dad reckons it wasn't him, that adjusted it to as if there were small bottles on
Okay.
So when everything fired up and everything got moving, the first bottle come around, the can swooped on it, and like it was supposed to be, as far as it was concerned, supposed to be crown sealing a small bottle. And it just the pressure on the bottle, and the bottles were exploding as they... And it was pretty well every second or so. And Dad's up in the sugar room, and we're down below, and of course we bolted. And Dad come down, shut everything down, blamed Darryl for doing the wrong adjustment, and Darryl blamed him. And
when you moved to Sydney, were you happy about that? Were you happy to have the mum and dad together? And
I think it was my fault that mum got back with dad, because he hadn't changed. And I was a telegram boy at that time, and I also played snooker down at the Manhattan and in Pitt Street and the Crystal Palace in George Street near the theatres there. And I used to, one day I used to get paid on Thursdays, and I was on the night shift from 12 to 8, and I went down at 10 o'clock and picked up my pay, which was probably about not much more than 10 quid for the fortnight. And on the Saturday night, I was playing a game of snooker, betting. We were betting money. And my father tapped me on the shoulder, and he said, "We haven't heard from you since Thursday morning. What do you think you're doing?" And I happened to be winning over those three days. I'd won a fair bit of money. I think it was more than it was £126 I had when he took it off me and gave it to mum. But he tapped me on the shoulder and he said, "What are you doing?" And the guy I was playing against didn't know what was going on, and he said, "Come on, we're going home." And I said, "Oh, Dad, I'll bet money on this game. And if I leave, I'll lose it. But I'm gonna win this game. I'm well ahead and I'm gonna win it. So can we let me play the game out, and then we'll go." So he did. I finished, I won. In those days you used to roll a note up, the bet, and put it under the cushion near the black spot. So I went over and I picked up £20, was on this, was the bet. And Dad said, "What's that?" And I said, that's what I won. £10 of mine and £10 of his. And he just shook his head. He couldn't believe it. But it was only the first time I ever won. I was I'd lose me pay, and that's why I think mum couldn't handle. She needed, even though I used to pay her 4 quid a fortnight, and that 4 quid must have went a long way to helping her, because she'd got a job at Pye in Tempe, Pye Television at Tempe. And somehow, well, she never, Mum or Dad never said why they got back together, but he hadn't changed. And Mum sort of, I think after I'd left, oh, some years later, it was a fair few years later that Mum and Dad ended up at in Parkes, and Mum left him again, went down to Mildura, no, Ballarat, where my brother was at that time. He bought a house and he said, you and Dad can come and live in the house. And Dad said he's not going, and Mum said, well, I'm going. She packed up and left and went.
So in Sydney, was that where you started your technician's training?
Yeah. I was a telegram boy, and after a year or so of that, I ended up on the fourth floor of the GPO with where the telexes all come in and were sent out. And I'd done a teletype course, and every year they'd come around with a vocational guidance test, and you'd fill out, you know, it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, what's the next number, and you know, have a triangle, square, a diamond, triangle, square, what's the next symbol, and pretty basic stuff. And they'd say, because I already told them I wanted to be a telephone technician, and exams are in, the entrance exams were in November, and they'd say, well, your vocational guidance scores say you should be in the clerical. You're very good with figures, and you should be in the clerical. I'd say, no, I want to be a telephone technician. All right, well, so I went the entrance exam 3 times. Next year, vocational guidance, it should be a clerk. No, I don't want to be a clerk. Missed out on the next. Wasn't that I was scoring badly, it was just that there were so many went into these entrance exams, and they only accepted maybe 700, and there'd be a couple of thousand line up. You know, you had to get 99.9%. Anyway, the third year, they must have felt sorry for me and said, look, this guy obviously wants to be a telephone technician. So I got the nod.
Over those years, what were you doing? Were you still a telegram?
Well, I was on the fourth floor with... November 63, what do they call them? Pictograms for the newspaper used to come in to the fourth floor on their big machines, and it'd be spinning and the photo would come out. And in December, when JFK was assassinated, they'd get the pictogram, all the pictograms for the day that were going into the paper, or that evening, afternoon's paper, and we used to deliver them to the newspaper. And that was, I can always remember I got the photo, the pictograms of JFK being shot to take down to the Sydney Morning Herald. And the Telegraph that day, I was still a telegram boy in 63. Because I had the Telegraph, for the Morning Telegraph was four pages, if you like. It was like one page, folded over, become four pages. And it just had photos of, and I went into the Wentworth Hotel with some telegrams, and a lot of the people at the hotel were Americans, you know, and they're all crowding me, wanting this paper to,
Yeah,
so I was still a telegram boy in 63, and it wasn't until 65, well, 64 I must have passed, because I was on the intake of the 1965 intake.
When did you realise that you wanted to be a telephone technician?
Probably after I became when I went upstairs at the GPO. It was like the old teletypes, the the mechanics of that, the typewriter, not the typewriter, telex machine. It was basically a typewriter, I suppose you'd call it. But I think it was, I don't really know. I knew I didn't want to be a clerk anyway.
Yeah.
It must have been it might have been my brother, because he's saying he used to have to go to Melbourne once a month for a week for training for after first year, the next 4 years, or the next 3 years. You went on a monthly basis back to theory.
Okay.
And it was just travel, I suppose. And
so your brother's experiences, he would have told you what it was like for him working in that area.
Yeah,
that makes sense. Yeah. Where were you living in Sydney?
Annandale, Rockdale, Cogra, Bexley North. Moved around a bit. I don't know whether it was because Dad was missing out on rental or paying rent or something like that. But he got a job at Fanta. Fanta had opened a factory in Sydney. And he went in, he came home, the first day he came home, he's talking to Mum, he said he's not going to stay there. And he said, there's no art in it anymore. He said, all you do is empty plastic bags of powder into vats and mix them up. That's what all the cordials are. And he had all his all his recipes. I think the reason he got out of Broken Hill was when he started his factory up, the unions, like he was going to the hotels and saying, selling his orange, lemonade, the mixers for the spirits. And because it was so, you know, they were so good, the hotels started buying off him. And the Barry Industrial Union decided that they didn't want that. They wanted, you know, they warned him. I think they warned him, and they somehow, I was discussing it with my brother a few years ago, and he and Daryl seemed to think that they tricked him into missing out on a mortgage payment for a month. And the woman that owned the factory, Lindstrom, don't know, sued him or breached a contract or something like that. And he had to get out. When he chucked the job in at Fanta in Sydney, he became a photocopier mechanic. Walking the streets of Sydney, just fixing up photocopiers, or servicing them as well. Yeah. He used to have a pretty heavy toolbox, and he was always upset that the cars would waiting for the lights to turn green, the cars would be in the pedestrian crossing lane that were waiting, and he'd walk along with his bag and just sort of accidentally bang his toolbox into the side of, break a light or something like that. And yeah, and then they moved to Parkes.
Did you go with them to Parkes?
No, well, when I'd done the first year of training in 65 at Alexandria Training School near St. Peter's Station in Sydney. That was full on year of just theory and practice. Then you selected a place in New South Wales where you want to do your ongoing training. And because I had an uncle at Leeton, and usually on our holidays in Broken Hill, we used to go to Uncle Jack's farm, because there you could drive the tractor, drive the truck, drive the ute, kill a sheep, castrate a sheep. Shearing, I never got into shearing because it was too hard. But I put in my request for Leeton, Narendra or Griffith. And depending on your scores, you got what you wanted, or you got sent to Sydenham Workshop. Uh-huh. And I had good scores, although it was funny, during the year, I went to the boss, the head instructor, and I said, because by then I was an adult trainee, I was over 18, and in the clerical section, people that had left during the year got clerical work. And talking to them, they were getting something like £3 a week, a fortnight, more than I was getting. So I decided that I would leave the training, technician in training, and go and do clerical, because I was getting £3 a fortnight or more. And the head instructor got me in, he called me into his office and he's saying, why do you want to leave? And I said, oh, this and that, and a few stories I told. And he said, he sort of picked up my paperwork and he said, no, I don't think you're going to go. You're going to be a good telephone technician, he said. And I know it's £3 a fortnight, but he said, you'll get over it. So I stayed on. And I actually, I said to him years later, because I was trying to cotton onto his daughter. And he was a rescue, I don't know what they called it in those days, but basically what he asked me to do one time, which I volunteered for, was they set up a car crash at Hurstville, outside Hurstville railway station. And there was two cars had a head-on collision. And they put all scars and different things on you. I was the driver with his daughter, and me with the people in the car that were not wearing their seatbelt. And the other car, the people in that were wearing their seatbelt. So we had to sit there. I'm in the driver's seat with my head against the steering wheel, and blood dripping off me wounds and things like that. And we stopped for morning tea or something like that, and he gave me this big round pill. And he said, when you get back in the car, I want you, the ambulance will be coming. When you hear the ambulance coming, pop that pill in your mouth. And it was huge, actually. You couldn't swallow it. Anyway, what it did was foamed up. I could feel it foaming up. And it was red, blood-coloured sort of thing, you know. And people are walking past going, oh, look, it's real. And they, fortunately, when they got me on the stretcher, the ambulance come and put me on the stretcher, they checked me vitals and put the sheet over me face. I was dead, you know. That's what happens when you don't wear seatbelts.
So this was separate to your training as a technician, and that was it? This
was just to impress the guy, the head instructor, so I could see more of his daughter.
What was the basic training that you did back then?
Well, at Leeton, you'd done everything. Maintenance of telephones, maintenance of like every morning you had to check all the battery levels, the emergency battery levels in case we lost power. You had to do all the readings. You went out and, fault finding and new installations, new phone installations. I went to a Leeton. Leeton was like what they call a CB, which was a common battery exchange, and they had switchboards at Leighton, and satellite unmanned rural automatic exchanges, they were called, or rural exchanges. They had two magneto exchanges at Wentworth and Witten and Yanko, which had switchboard operators there, and the rest of them around the place were automatic exchanges. And a little old lady, she's about 90, I suppose, I went in Leighton, put a new service on for her, and the phones in the CB exchange had a dummy dial. And I finished installing and I went and saw her and I said, all right, that's ready to go now. And she walked out and looked at the phone. She said, where's the dial? And I said, well, to make a call. She said, how do I make a call? I said, you just lift the receiver and the operator will answer at the exchange, and you tell her the number that you want and she'll connect her. And she said, oh, how doesn't a PMG come on improve, become much easier? She said, where I come from, I had to dial my own numbers. And I thought, I don't know whether I'd laugh or cry, you know. She thought it was an improvement going back to manual exchanges. But and you go out, I can remember farmer, all the wires would get tangled up. Normally you just say the aerial wires. Normally you say, well, we've got to get a 90 out to fix up, restring the wires and that. And I just drove into underneath and got on the roof of the vehicle and separated and put a Bakelite handset to keep them apart, strapped to the two wires, and then got bogged. And farmer comes along and I said, you want to pull me out of a bog? And he said, have you fixed me phone? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, I'll do that. I'll pull you out. Otherwise, I was going to stay there until I had the vehicle was going to stay there until I had to fix his phone.
Just wondering what was the most common work you would do back then at Leighton?
Well, the beauty of it was you'd done everything. You got so much experience with different types of equipment, different phones. And it helped in when you went for theory, because you, like a guy that was in the same year as me that was put in Sydenham workshop, they just get to pull a phone apart and put a new insides in it or clean it up, put another dial in, a new dial, and it's sent out. But with out in the countryside, you know, you got, and they country people were that friendly sort of thing too, you know. I drove into a farm one day, just drove in the driveway around the back of the farmhouse, and they're bolting everywhere. They got 44 gallon drums cooking up their grappa, which was illegal. And they'd say, "Oh, it's only you, Bluey." Heard the dogs barking.
Would you upgrade the existing telephones? Like, I'd imagine in the country there'd be a lot of very old telephones.
Oh, yeah. Well, the wooden ones in my early days, much to my... I mean, it happened all over Australia. Every technician you talk to, what you had to do was, if you got an obsolete telephone and replaced it, you had to take it back to the exchange, box it up, fill out an S7 form, which was a lot of writing, you know, it was a pain. So you just go and chuck them in the Murrumbidgee River or burn them. The wooden ones, the metal ones went into the... I reckon we used to get a... We'd get a ute load full. We'd go out the Uroli Bridge and throw them in the Murrumbidgee River. Hundreds of them. My old boss from here, he used to work at Nambour in Queensland, and he said he emptied